Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Charla Comunitaria. This is your host, Aurea Ortiz. Bienvenidos a todos a Charla Comunitaria. Esta es su anfitriona, Aurea Ortiz. Today, this one is dedicated to bringing hope, building understanding, and sharing valuable resources with our audience. We hope everyone leaves with a greater sense of appreciation for the spirit of Bethlehem and a stronger resolve to support those who have generously served our community. Before we begin our main conversation, we are honored to introduce Dr. Ben Yopes. Dr. Yopes, welcome to Charla Comunitaria.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Let me just talk a bit about you. It's not a weird thing that, you know, that we talk about people when they're doing such wonderful work in a community and they have such an amazing background. He is widely recognized for his steadfast support of veterans and their families. Through his ongoing commitment to community service, Dr. Yopes has made a meaningful impact on the lives of those who have served our nation, both in Bethlehem and across the Lehigh Valley. His leadership and compassion are truly inspiring and continue to touch many. Just want to kind of touch base on a recent story featured by Karen Mallett on Channel 69 in a special segment that aired way back there on March 15, 2023. The story offered a touching glimpse into his mission to save life, highlighting his tireless advocacy for mental health and his encouragement for others to seek help and rediscover their sense of purpose. Dr. Yopes, Could you tell us more about your personal story and what it meant to be a spotlight in this segment?
Yes. Yeah, so I grew up in the Poconos here in Pennsylvania, and I actually had planned to go to college back in 2000, you know, the early 2000s, and then 9/11 happened. And I ended up joining the U.S. Army because of 9/11. And during that, I ended up deploying to Iraq several times as an infantryman, and also in kind of a long-range reconnaissance capacity. And I experienced a lot of, you know, what you'd expect during war. When I got home from that, I ended up not really being sure what I wanted to do, but I knew that the skill sets that I had developed when I was overseas had to be useful for something. So kind of a logical choice was to go into law enforcement. I ended up becoming an Allentown police officer. Probably about halfway through my career, everything I'd experienced in the military and then everything that I had experienced in law enforcement, and Allentown can be a pretty busy city, I was trying to grit through that. So I was just trying to tough those things out. And that worked pretty well for a while. But eventually, if you're just trying to tough things out, especially traumas, it takes a toll. I ended up pretty much needing to take a knee and get help for myself to deal with the PTSD and the other issues that were cropping up because of just years and years of seeing and experiencing traumatic incidents. And from that kind of came a lot of things. So first, my life, you know, really started to get better. Rather than toughing out each day, not really understanding, you know, what's wrong with me, why do I feel this way, I was actually able to take a look at myself. And then through that, I was able to connect with a lot of first responders and veterans that also are either taking that journey of recovery and healthiness, or they maybe need to get on that path. And through that, it kind of opened up an entire second chapter of my life. It was first a professional chapter where I was a hostage negotiator. Then I was in charge of the critical incident and crisis intervention officers for the city of Allentown. And one of the things that really keeps me motivated is learning. So constantly learning new things. It keeps you well-rounded. So I decided to get my master's in criminal behavior, and then I moved on to get my doctorate in psychology. And throughout that, we've been doing so much work. One, in the Lehigh Valley, it started with the policing world, breaking the stigma a little bit and saying it's okay to get help if you're struggling. And then moving even further than that and showing everybody, hey, here's what struggle actually looks like. Because you may not even realize that you're struggling. You may think you're doing perfectly fine, and there's some stuff, some bolts to tighten there. So We ended up building out a first responder support group, and then that has since grown from just Allentown, and actually pretty large. It grew from Allentown to Lehigh County to Northampton County, and then our wellness group now covers Lehigh County, Northampton County, Monroe County, Carbon County.
Wow.
And then we're touching a little bit of Montgomery and Bucks. And the whole idea is to, one, normalize that struggle. Say, hey, it's all right to struggle, and there's brothers and sisters there to help you through this. Two, we also vet out resources to make sure that they're the appropriate resources for that first responder world. We can be a little more stubborn than most. And then on top of that, the things that we are going to need to unpack can be filled with a lot of trauma. And the last thing we want to do is make somebody's professional job more difficult because maybe we're unloading too much. So we have to find the right providers to work with us. And then the third thing that kind of came out of that, which was interesting, is obviously me being a combat veteran, had a lot of connections in that world, started working a lot with combat veterans and first responders separately. And then we had this idea, let's get them together and see what happens. And we started getting the first responders and the veterans together, and it has been amazing. So the coolest thing about that, so a lot of veterans are looking for continued purpose, you know, purpose-driven existence. That's what keeps them healthy. And the first responders are looking for someone to validate their experiences so that they feel like they're willing to get help. And those two groups give that to each other. It's one of the most amazing things. And then the other thing that's really neat is the veterans getting that purpose-driven existence. They also, a lot of the veterans groups, they're not shy to advocate for themselves. Whereas the first responder world generally does not advocate for itself. It doesn't go out and say, hey, I'm struggling. So having the veterans really kind of encouraging the first responders, hey, not only should you advocate for yourself, but we're going to do it too. It's really starting some momentum, which has been really, really, really cool to watch. But overall, we've been doing some very interesting work. We have four support groups that we run locally in the region, three post-traumatic growth groups, which is the other side of the coin from post-traumatic stress. It's helping veterans and first responders to adapt purpose-driven existence. And then we also have a substance use group for first responders and veterans that are struggling. And then tons of resources. Oh boy, just lots of stuff.
No, and wonderful stuff. And in particular to this person that you helped that was on that top of that building. Like, it takes a special person to do that. Like, not everybody can go, hey, you know. And the way that you approach, it wasn't a first responder. It wasn't a veteran. It was just a simple person. Yeah. Like, many that are wandering in our streets, yeah, that just say, you know, this is the day.
Yeah. Well, that's part of my, so I developed that line of thinking, I mean, a long time ago. I mean, if you really play through what first responders and veterans are, we are people that are willing to put our lives on the line for the person that we do not know. And we're willing to do it on a regular basis. The thing to that is if we aren't taking care of ourselves mentally and physically, those jobs are going to really beat us down. And we end up sometimes becoming the opposite of what we started out wanting to be. So that constant taking care of yourself, taking care of your brothers and sisters, it allows you to see that people out there, they're not bad, they're not, you know, evil. A lot of people are just struggling. Mm-hmm. They're sick. They need help. And that gentleman in particular, you know, I guess I'll get a little bit into it. So he was originally armed with a knife, and he had fled out into the fire escape of the building. And we got called, obviously, because someone's running around this building with a knife. So I get there. He ends up running all the way up the fire escape, all the way up to the roof, and start talking with him. I'm recognizing this is a guy who's struggling. And what was great is we were able to talk, and he did toss the knife, which was good. But he was struggling in a lot of different ways, not only with his health, but also with some drug and alcohol issues. So just kept talking to him. And the longer we're talking, I'm realizing I don't see this ending in a positive way. So I had to kind of switch gears and figure out a way that I could get close enough to him to yank him off the ledge. So that's what I ended up doing. Could you get hurt in the process of that? Yeah. Yeah, he could. But I had other officers there at the time. You know, I kind of did an analysis in my head. You know, we've got to save this guy. What's the direction to go with that? So I just grabbed him, pulled him back, and then had some help from other officers. And you know, the key, too, is to keep that message of hope going. With him and many others, and what I currently do to this day, is reminding people that the book doesn't close. This isn't the final chapter. You're still drawing breath, which means there's still a hope. No matter how bad it is, there's some form of a silver lining somewhere that through help, we can continue forward in a positive way.
And one of the reasons I wanted to have this episode is because we lose our ability to have some empathy for people that are suffering. But when you have people dying and when you have people suffering, how can we be better? I was at the Bethlehem Shelter, and I saw so many people there alone. And we were serving, but it's touching that there's a lot of young people that then families. So it's not just like the simple one person that it used to be. Now it's becoming more.
Absolutely.
What can we do about this?
Well, I think a couple different things. So the first thing I would say is always keeping in our mind, you know, to have gratitude. And gratitude is important across the board. But what I mean in this specific area is while we go about, and even, you know, for myself, I'm retired from full-time law enforcement, so I still do some part-time work, and I do a lot of work with the outreach side. The holidays, it picks up a lot. But for the most part, I'm able to be home with my family on the holidays. There were many, many years I was not able to do that. So to recognize that our military members and our first responders, they're working the holidays to keep us safe. So to remember that there's a lot of sacrifice that happens in order to have the protections and the safeties that we enjoy here. You know, to have a Christmas or a Hanukkah with your family, any holiday with your family, safely, quietly, there's someone sacrificing somewhere to allow that to happen. And a lot of people may say, well, no, it's not that dangerous here. Right. But if you call a certain phone number, within 5 minutes, no matter where you are, there's going to be a group of people coming to save you from whatever situation you've gotten yourself into or has happened to you. And that is not common in every single country. You can't get instant help like that. And then for free, too, which is the amazing part. I mean, this stuff obviously costs tax dollars. So that's something we have to recognize and have gratitude for. That no matter what day of the year, that help is there. But then for the people that are struggling themselves, you know, the public that's out there struggling, compassion. Have compassion. Take a minute. Hear their story.
And with that in mind, we are just going to have a small recess, and we're going to come back and pick up on that.
Okay.
You're listening to Charla Comunitaria. This is your host, Audrey Ortiz.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back. This is Charla Comunitaria. This is your host, Audrey Ortiz, and I'm sitting here having a wonderful conversation with Dr. Ben Yopes. And we're going to continue our conversation. And I'm just going to ask few questions to our guests, and he'll take it from there.
Right. Sounds good to me.
Okay. So one of the questions that I've always have, and I'm going to just kind of like align it with another one, so then you could continue with those. What are some of the struggles veterans and their families face once they leave the military? And why is mental health so important for first responders, and what should they keep in mind?
Excellent. That's a good question, and it's a loaded question because it's got so many different facets. So there's a lot to, you know, I know what I experienced as a combat vet, right? It's a unique experience. And then as a first responder, it's a very unique experience. So there are experiences that most of the public are never going to experience, using the same word experience many times, but they're very similar. Mm-hmm. They are very similar. The most similar thing that I can relate to combat experience is being a first responder. It's just a different theater of operations. You're seeing and experiencing such extreme things for the mission of trying to help people, trying to create a safe environment for people. And that is quite a culture shock when you are extracted from that and expected to function in a different environment, such as just not being working as a first responder. So you go from being the person everybody calls when all the worst things happen to then your day ends or it's now your weekend, and you somehow expect it to be completely normal. Same thing from the military. You go overseas and you're exposed to, if during a combat deployment, you're exposed to some absolutely horrific things. And then just even being in the military in general, your peacekeeping operations, your disaster relief operations, you're seeing things that most people don't see. And then again, you're supposed to somehow function in a regular environment after that. And the best way I can describe this is from the serious incident, the critical incident, the average American in our country is going to see between 0 and 5 horrific things, absolutely horrific, conscious, shocking things over the course of their life. Your military member, your first responder, is going to see hundreds of things. And when we back up to that civilian, those situations a lot of times cause them to completely change everything in their lives. They may start therapy. They may have all sorts of different things that happen, positive or negative, due to those traumas. But then we have our vets and first responders who experience hundreds and hundreds of these. And sometimes society forgets that there's a group of men and women out there that are dealing with these en masse. You know, for every one incident somebody sees, you know, we have to bear in mind that there's a lot of people out there stabilizing that situation. And then we forget about them, which is kind of a normal thing. We don't want to walk around thinking about all the bad things that happen in the world constantly. But I think it is important to remember that those bad things are stabilized by a group of men and women, and we need to honor them, and we need to respect them, and we need to support them when they need help. So a couple different layers here. One, if you know a first responder or a veteran, just ask them how they're doing. And if they get kind of offended and say, I'm fine, that means they're not doing good. They're not going to tell you. They're going to usually tell you, I'm fine, and kind of give you an angry look, like, don't ask me questions like that. That means they're probably not fine. So ask them again, how are you really doing? Just having someone to talk to can be a very, very important thing because it opens up the dialogue. And then connecting them to other first responders, other veterans who are living healthy lives. We do a lot of that locally. People are more than welcome to reach out to me, and I'll tell them where our support groups are and the different things that we have available.
Can you give me, because we might forget, phone number or
my email is going to be the best way to get a hold of me, and that's going to be biobst@bticonsultingservice.com. That's going to be your fastest way to get a hold of me. That is my work email, but it's the one I answer the most. So getting a hold of me there is going to be the best way. And then the other side of it is We could definitely use some advocacy champions from the general public. I'll give you one fact that's pretty shocking. So, and a lot of vets actually get really surprised by this when I tell them about it. So you serve in the military, and when you get out, as long as you served honorably, you have lifelong health care. First responders don't. So a lot of first responders will serve 20 years, taking a lot of injuries, missing all the holidays, all sorts of stress injuries, and stress issues crop up all sorts of other things, coronary artery disease, and then we have all the injuries from being on the job, getting in foot pursuits, getting hurt from the EMS and fire side, carrying heavy people, back injuries. So you pop out the other end of this at, you know, maybe 50, 55, sometimes earlier, some departments are 20 years and out. And then there's a good majority of agencies out there that don't have retirement health care. So a lot of people may say, well, they just go get a regular policy. Try seeing what the quote is when you have diagnosed PTSD, back injuries, high blood pressure. I see a lot of first responders that can't afford actual health care. They can't afford to go out and get insurance because their insurance rates are almost their entire retirement check. So we have a lot of first responders out there that don't have any means to get help after 20, 25 years of serving their communities. In my personal opinion, that's unacceptable. These are people who, you know, wrote a blank check to society and said, we're going to take care of you. But then when it comes to they're taking the uniform off and they need to be taken care of, there's nothing there for them. So a lot of times what we end up doing is we find ways to get them scholarshiped into mental health care. We find free clinics to get them medical help. But that shouldn't happen. These are people that, you know, when you call 911, they don't say, well, please give us your insurance information, and then we'll send an officer. You know, that isn't what happens. These guys come no matter what, no matter how bad it is. But then when they need help after the end of their service, they can't get it. So if anybody wants to advocate for anything, that would be the territory right there, lifelong health care for first responders.
And that is a powerful thing because sometimes, you know, we want to honor veterans. We want to honor first responders. And we just think like with a little party or little thing that's honoring them. But advocating for, as a family member, as a mom of a veteran, I know what it happens when your loved one is out there. You're like serving with them because you don't know what's going on over there in that anxiety and that. Mm-hmm. And then when he comes home and he needs help, you know, and you don't know what to do because you don't understand the process or what is going on. I know that I understand those mothers and probably, you know, in a different case, if it was a husband or a father or someone that is there, it will be just the same anxiety of not knowing how to help the person that's coming to back home.
Right.
And so advocacy is the most important thing for veterans. And I'm thanking you for bringing that up because really, you know, it's not just the veteran that is serving is the families as well because they're by themselves and they're also worried about their loved one.
What we do has we have a lot of different resources. We also cover a lot of the families, the children too. That's a big area. So when we have an issue with our kids, the children's mental health and healthcare system can be a little bit difficult to navigate. So from our provider side, we also have a lot of navigators that will help with that. The best way I can describe kind of what we built is it's just like a giant community collaborative for first responders and veterans to communicate, and the providers help a lot. And we have some amazing providers that really donate and help a lot. You know, they donate a lot of time to help with the work that we do. So it's just unbelievable. But I think the big thing is encourage your loved one, if they're a veteran or first responder, to one, not keep it in, not try to grit through it, because this stuff's going to come out one way, shape, or form. And the best way to do that is to get them around other first responders and vets that are living a healthy life. because then you don't have to try to have that conversation where, and I'm sure most military families and first responder families can relate to having heard this, you're not going to understand. That's what they're going to say. So get them around people that do, that can say, I do understand, and I know where to get your help. And that's the key. So like I said, anybody's welcome to reach out to me, and then we'll get everybody involved in the work that we do. It's a worthwhile mission, big time.
I'm adding my name to that list.
Excellent. Excellent.
And we had this wonderful celebration at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, and you were a speaker, and we thank you for that because that was amazing. Having all of those veterans and first responders was an amazing thing. And we see that a lot around the Lehigh Valley, that we honor veterans. But to make it more meaningful, give me your closing thoughts on what would be the best thing. You just told me about advocacy, but joining which service or community service, advocating group, or anything that you could tell us
before we
end this conversation.
I think it's less about joining any group and more about just kind of everybody keeping this in their mind. And if you get the opportunity to talk to a lawmaker, you know, I'm not a big fan of adversarial relationships. So don't bother your lawmakers for no reason, but ask the question, hey, are we working on anything to take care, better care of first responders, their health care? Are we working on anything to take better care of veterans? And develop that collaborative approach with our lawmakers. Because I'm sure, you know, these guys are they're probably used to getting yelled at. And I'm sure just like everybody, if I'm getting yelled at, I'm putting a mask on, right? But if we get our lawmakers thinking and we work with them and say, hey, what are we doing and what can we do? And the most important thing is not expecting everybody else to do it. Get involved. Because when we talk to that lawmaker, we talk to that advocacy group, and we say, what can we do and what can I do? And it may be something as simple as volunteer at one of the local shelters. They may need some extra hands. It may be the VA needs help getting people to and from appointments. So you volunteer a half a day a month to get older vets to and from appointments. It could be something as simple as you have some old clothes and they need to get donated. So donating them to one of the veterans groups. And one thing to mention is a lot of the veterans groups are also now serving that first responder population. Again, they've recognized, hey, we've got this whole swath of guys that really don't have much support. So they're kind of providing that, making sure that, you know, if we have a volunteer fireman who's down on his luck and he doesn't have clothes for his kids, we will make sure they have clothes, you know, things like that. So getting involved in that capacity is the best way I could advise.
I am so blessed to have you today, Dr. Ben Yopes. You have really mentioned what we ought to do in this season is just to be more mindful of who's around us and be mindful to kind of like hand out that wonderful spirit of giving to this population. And again, we are thankful for you being here. I know that you're very busy and you have a lot of things to do, but you took this time for us to understand how best to serve the ones that are serving us. So thank you for being here in Charla Comunitaria.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me.
This is Audie Ortiz.